guys, and welcome back to a Haunting True Crime Podcast. This is your host, Sierra, and if the audio sounds different today, it's because I finally got a boom arm, which, if you don't know, it just suspends the mic in front of my mouth. It's great. I love it. I also have a desk now, so I have a designated place to do my podcast, so that's cool too. No more dining room table. Yeah, so this week I'm going to do a very prolific serial killer, John Wayne Gacy. Now, we went over John Wayne Gacy briefly in the last episode because we did the Lost Boys of Hannibal, and there was a conspiracy theory that John Wayne Gacy killed the boys. Well, I did some research, and then after I had done the Lost Boys of Hannibal, John Wayne Gacy popped up in my Murder Minute app, and I was like, this is meant to be. So I have John Wayne Gacy for you this week. Alright, so John Wayne Gacy was born March 17th of 1942 in Chicago, Illinois. His father, John Stanley, was physically and verbally abusive to his wife and children, and it caused him to always seek his father's approval. He felt like he wasn't good enough for his father, and this, that, and the other. And then in 1949, John, little John, was molested by a family friend. The friend would pick John up in his pickup truck, and he would take him somewhere and then, like, fondle him. And he never told his father because he thought his father would blame him for what happened. So instead of finishing high school, he started working for a local Democratic candidate as an assistant. It wasn't enough for his father. So in 1962, he moved to Las Vegas and found work as a mortuary assistant. So basically, he was working with, like, funeral directors to embalm bodies. And so he slept on a cot behind the embalming room, and he liked to observe the embalming process because he's a freak. And later he confessed that one night he was alone. He crawled into a casket with the dead body of a teenager, and he cuddled and caressed the body until he was like, whoa, what am I doing? And then the very next day he moved home to Chicago because he couldn't handle what he had done. So then, once he was back in Chicago, he enrolled in Northwestern Business College and graduated in 1963. After he graduated from the business college, he rose through the ranks of a shoe store in Springfield, Illinois, and he had become the manager of the department that he was in. And I'm thinking, if a shoe store has departments, then this is a very big shoe store. But that's where he met his first wife, Marilyn, and she worked under him, and they were married in 1964, so they hadn't really even known each other a year. I think it was like 4 or 5 months, and they were married. And then in 1964, he also had his second homosexual experience. So John Wayne Gacy was very involved in the JC's Club, very involved. And the JC's Club, if you don't know, is a club that's dedicated to teaching leadership skills to young men. I think it's 18 and older. Don't quote me on that, but it's about teaching young men leadership skills. I do know that part. And a fellow club member had invited him to come over to drink, and once Gacy got drunk, the fellow club member performed oral sex on him. And not much is said about it, if, like, he enjoyed it or anything like that. He did later identify as bisexual, saying, you know, that he liked men and women. So, I don't know. But in 1966, John and Marilyn moved to Waterloo, Iowa, like I mentioned last week. And I guess Marilyn's father had bought 3 KFC restaurants, and they were going to manage them. And then in 1966, they have their son, and in 1967, they have their daughter. And then Gacy describes these years as perfect. They were, like, the best. You know, these were his favorite years of his life, I guess. But in 1966, his parents visit him, and his father apologizes for the abuse and all the, you know, just terribleness. And he finally gives John his approval. But that wasn't enough for him. And you'll see why as we go on. So Gacy also joined the local JCs in Waterloo. So in this local JCs, it's not the whole club, but in the local JCs in Waterloo, they like to use drugs and watch porn, and they did wife swapping, and they even participated in prostitution. So they weren't prostitutes, but they hired prostitutes. So Gacy also liked to favor the young male employees at his KFCs that he managed. And he would give them alcohol before he made sexual advances. And if the boys rejected him, he would make light and be like, "Oh, I was just joking." Or he would say that he was testing their character. But his first sexual assault was in August of 1967. On a teenager named Donald Voorhees. Yes, Voorhees, like Jason from the movie. He got him to come over by promising to show him porn. And then once he was there, he gave him alcohol. And then he coerced Voorhees to perform oral sex on him. So Voorhees performed it on John. And then, I guess over the course of the next several months, Gacy actually assaulted numerous other teens. Yeah, it's crazy, but I don't think they came forward. And then Donald Voorhees finally came forward about it almost a year later in March of 1968. So then Gacy was arrested for the assault and the attempted assault of another teenager. And then in September, he paid an employee to corner Voorhees and spray him with mace and beat him into not testifying. So then he was charged with having someone assault Voorhees, and he was ordered to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. And two psychologists, I'm not sure if they're psychiatrists or just like psychologists, but two psychologists observed him for 17 days, and they both came to the conclusion that he has antisocial personality disorder. And that is defined as a mental condition where a person shows no regard for the rights or feelings of others. In their report, the most striking aspect of the test results is the patient's total denial of responsibility for everything that has happened to him. And he pled guilty to oral sodomy charges, but said that Voorhees pursued him and that he obliged. So he said, "Oh, well, yeah, that happened, but he told me he wanted to do it and I let him." Which is so stupid. He was convicted on December 3rd of 1968 and sentenced to 10 years in the Anamosa State Penitentiary. And on the same day he was convicted, Marilyn filed for divorce, and she never let Gacy see his kids again. So, in my opinion, good on her, because if he did that to some young boy, I wouldn't want him around my son either. And then June 1970... he was granted parole and 12 months probation, which was only 18 months into his incarceration. So that's a year and a half out of 10 years. You think they would have held him longer for assault on a minor, but no. So then after this, he moved back to Chicago because there's nothing in Waterloo for him, because he sure didn't have KFC anymore. And then in February of 1971, he was arrested for sexually assaulting another teenage boy. And the case was dismissed after the victim failed to appear in court. Seems like he hired someone to take care of this one, too. His parole officer was never informed of the incident. And his parole ended 8 months later, and his records in Iowa were secured. So unless he committed another crime, they weren't going to show up. His mother helped him buy a home at 8213 Summerdale Avenue, and this is where the 33 known murders were committed, and I think 29 of the victims were actually buried. And then this is where we get into the fucked up part of John Wayne Gacy. He picked up 16-year-old Timothy McCoy at a Greyhound bus station on January 2nd of 1972. Okay, so when he woke up, he saw Timothy in the doorway with a knife. And they struggled, but Gacy overpowered him, and he stabbed him in the chest multiple times. Timothy had actually made breakfast, and he was coming to wake up John, but he discovered this after he'd already stabbed him multiple times and he was dead. So he buried him in the crawl space. And then Gacy made the remark later that he had an intense orgasm as he killed the boy. Gross. Absolutely gross. So in June of 1972, John Wayne Gacy was arrested for assault and reckless conduct on a youth, and the young man claimed that Gacy had impersonated a cop and forced him into oral sex. The case was dropped because the defendant tried to blackmail Gacy into paying him to keep quiet. So then after this happened, he married Carol Huff in July of 1972, and Carol and her two daughters moved into his Summerdale Avenue house. And after that, he started his contracting business, PDM Contractors. And since he hired many teens and young men, that's where he found his victims for a good chunk. And then as he, you know, started getting more successful in his business and his business kind of grew, he decided that he was going to join the Jolly Joker Club, and he began performing as Pogo or Patches the Clown, which were two different clowns that he liked to impersonate. So, Pogo and Patches. Everyone knows Pogo, though, because he was the one with, like, the real pointy eyes and mouth that looked creepy. And then Gacy commits his next murder in 1974. The young man was between 14 and 18 years old, and he was strangled and buried under a barbecue pit. So that's nice. Poor guy. In July of 1975, John Bukovich was upset about not being paid for a couple weeks, which I would be too. So Gacy invited him over to talk about it, and he got him drunk, showed him the handcuff trick, where he would handcuff himself and then get out of the handcuffs, and then he would have them try it. And then once the handcuffs were on, he would reveal that he had the keys the whole time. But then after the handcuff trick, he raped and tortured John Bukovich until he finally just strangled him. And then Bukovich was buried under the garage. And his father contacted Gacy about his son, and Gacy offered to help look for him. But his father was like, no, I think you're suspicious. So for the next 3 years, the Bukovich family reached out to the police more than 100 times because they wanted to have Gacy investigated, but they were ignored. Because Gacy was like an upstanding citizen, you know, he was real successful in JC's, and he even took a picture with the first lady, like, right before he was arrested. So, like, this guy was like an upstanding member of society, so the police wouldn't investigate him. In October of 1975, Carol asked Gacy for a divorce after they argued over business finances. The divorce was final in March of 1976, and Carol and her two daughters moved out. And after this, his cruising for victims, as he said, picked up. So in the space of a few months, I think it was about 6 months, he killed 14-year-old Samuel Stapleton, two unidentified males along with a male adult. He murdered 16-year-old James Hakinson on August 15th of 1976, and then one more identified teen and two identified adults. Unidentified adult males between August through October. So this guy really started murdering after his wife left him, which is a little suspicious. So then he allowed David Cram to move in and be his roommate. And Gacy tried to rape him on multiple occasions. And eventually, he was like, okay, I'm done with this. You're creepy. I'm moving out. But then Gacy got Michael Rossi to replace him. So then in late October, he kidnapped and killed two friends, 16-year-old Kenneth Park and 14-year-old Michael Marino, and buried them in the same grave in the crawl space. Fucked up. Real fucked up. 2 days later, an employee of Gacy, William Bundy, also disappeared. And then in December of 1976, Gregory Godzik disappeared after only being employed with Gacy for 3 weeks. So, like, you could have let the guy stay a little bit longer so you weren't so suspicious. He told his family that he was hired to dig trenches in the same crawl space that he was found buried in. So in January of 1977, John Zick, who was friends with his earlier victims, Bukovic and Godzik, also disappeared. And then they ended up finding his ring with his initials engraved in it in Gacy's house. But that's later on down the road. But I thought that I would mention that. And he also sold other items of Zick to his roommate Rossi before he moved out. He also killed nine more teens and young men in 1977. And then December 30th, Gacy kidnapped 19-year-old Robert Donnelly from a bus stop at gunpoint. And he took him to his home where he raped and tortured him, along with nearly drowning him, only to revive him. He drove Donnelly to his workplace to let him go. And then when he was reported to the police, Gacy said that the encounter was consensual and charges weren't filed. So I actually talked to my mom about this because she was alive in the 70s. And she was telling me that, you know, being gay wasn't like, not everyone was out in the open like they are today. You know, it was more taboo to be out in the open and business like that. It was still like, the country was still ruled by religion very, very heavily. And so being gay wasn't really as accepted as it is today. So I'm thinking, this is my personal opinion, that this was not investigated because it was supposed to be like a gay domestic violence. You know what I mean? And they didn't want to deal with it. Anyway, after that, March of 1976, he kidnapped 26-year-old Jeffrey Rignall, and he repeatedly chloroformed and raped him with various instruments. I couldn't find what the instruments were. I honestly probably don't want to know what the instruments were. Either way, he was sodomized and very possibly raped. Poor guy. So then finally, when he was done with him, Gacy took his unconscious body and left him in the park. And then when he woke up, he reported the assault to the police. Again, they didn't investigate. So then Rignall was like, I'm not going to let this guy get away with it. So he started to investigate, and he did a stakeout on the area where he was kidnapped. And he eventually saw Gacy's car. And then in April, he saw the car in April, and he followed it to his home. The police issued an arrest warrant in July, and Gacy was arrested. And while he was waiting on his trial for what he did to Jeff Rignall, he just kept killing. Then he decided, oh, well, I can't fit all these bodies in my crawl space anymore, so I'm going to throw them in the Des Plaines River. And that's what he did. He threw them in the Des Plaines River, and they found 4 of the bodies in the river. But Gacy said he threw 5, and they haven't found a 5th, so no idea. In the case involving Jeff Rignall, Gacy was charged with battery, and he was fined $3,000. Like, no prison time? I don't know. In February of 1978, he kidnapped the last victim of the crawl space, and like I said, the rest of them were thrown in the river. And then on December 11th of 1978, he kidnapped his last victim, 15-year-old Robert Peast. And Robert Peast was getting ready to end his shift at the Nissen Pharmacy. And then Gacy came in to talk to the owner about a remodel job. And then when Robert's mother showed up to pick him up from work, he said, oh, give me a few minutes. I'm going to talk to a man about a construction job, which was paying almost double what he was making at the pharmacy. But he never came back. And the family, you know, the mom went home. She loaded up the family and they searched the entire area for him. And they couldn't find him. So then they went to the police to report him missing. The police contacted Gacy and denied any knowledge of his whereabouts. They checked the criminal background and they found the battery charge along with the sexual assault of a teen. So they were like, ooh, this guy is suspicious. We're going to get a search warrant. So armed with a search warrant, they entered Gacy's home and found jewelry, driver's licenses, male clothes that didn't fit Gacy, handcuffs, and syringes. They also found a receipt from Nissen Pharmacy that had been in Peace's pocket when he disappeared. And the receipt was for a film development of a, you know, close friend. And he said that he would develop it for her and then, you know, he would, you know, give it to her later. So this was in his pocket. They know it was. And so then they decided they were going to keep him under surveillance. They're like, we're going to have this guy fuck up and we're going to, you know, prove it. So then, after he was on surveillance, they got statements from Jeff Rignall and the families of the missing boys. And eventually, before they got their second search warrant, they also got statements from his former roommates, who also gave their statements, including the fact that they both dug trenches in the crawl space. And so, during this time that he was under surveillance, Gacy was trying to befriend the detectives, and he would tell them where he was going, and he would offer them coffee, and he would eat at restaurants with them. And one morning, he invited them in for breakfast, and the detectives noted this smell of death. I was like, that's gross. So then finally, he starts to break down, and he was like, oh, they're close to catching me. So he filed a civil suit against the police, saying that they were harassing him and they were committing illegal search and seizures on his house and that they were ruining his good reputation. So then finally, after being under surveillance for a while, they witnessed Gacy hand off a package that contained marijuana to a gas station clerk, and he was followed and arrested. And while he was in custody, this is when they talked to the other this is when they talk to the roommates and they get their second search warrant, and they went back to look for anything to tie Robert Peace to Gacy. And they ended up looking in the crawl space to see if they could find a body. And they found so many bodies, but they didn't find Robert Peace. So this is when Gacy admitted to killing between 25 and 30 victims on December 22nd. He described the torture that he inflicted on these poor, poor boys and young men. And he told the police where he buried the victims: in the backyard, under the garage, and in the crawl space. It took several months to exhume all the bodies from their burial spots. 29 victims were found in the crawl space, or in the backyard, or under the garage. And the bodies that had been found in the river were also attributed to John. And then they finally found Robert Peace in April of 1979. He was thrown in the river. And Gacy was convicted of 33 murders and sentenced to death on March 12th of 1980. And he tried to appeal his case to get it knocked down from death to, like, life in prison, blah, blah, blah. They all failed. All of his appeals failed, like they should have. And he was executed by lethal injection on May 10th of 1994. And there are still six victims that have remained unidentified. They're working, you know, still to this day to try to identify these young men. They're still working to this day to identify these six men, which is so sad because there are six families out there that, you know, they're trying to figure out, well, did John kill them or did they run away? Were they killed by someone else? And these people don't have closure. And it is incredibly sad. And this case was actually very hard for me to research because, sorry, I'm getting a little tearing up. But these poor men, they were killed, and their families will never get them back. And it's just, it's so hard for me to talk about, honestly, because it's just, it's so sad. And I feel like Gacy got what he deserved. I feel like after you kill 33 men, you probably should get sentenced to death. Because it just, you took somebody away from their family forever. And you did it 33 times without a care in the world. 33 times that you didn't care about taking somebody's life. Like, that is unforgivable. And I guess there was artwork that was found in his home. And it was paintings of clowns and other weird stuff. And I think there's still some of them out there today. And I think they've actually recreated them or, like, reprinted them. And you can find pictures on the internet. But the family had actually come together and they bought these pieces of art. And they gathered together to burn them. To give some kind of, like, a closure to themselves. And I don't blame them. And this artwork was really weird. But also, before we go, I would also like to cover the fact that Pennywise the clown from It was also inspired by John Wayne Gacy, the killer clown. Yeah, I don't have much of an opinion this week other than it's just incredibly sad. And I don't know, I couldn't get a lot of motivation to type out my notes for this episode. I had to do it over the course of several days. And it was just so sad. But I think that's all I got for you guys. I hate to leave it on, like, a really sad note. Usually I have something funny to put in here. But, yeah. So, I love you guys. And you can talk to me on my social media. My Instagram, @ Haunting True Crime Podcast. Facebook, Haunting True Crime. And my Gmail, hauntingtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. I would love to get suggestions from you guys. Yeah. So, you can contact me on my social media. And I guess I'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.